call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, it's Freaky Friday here on a Sunday morning wake-up call. Rick Moore is here, standing behind me. This is Sean McCord, star of Stage, Screen, and Radio Activity. I'm normally the guy answering the phones and handing notes to Rick. Now I get to push the buttons, and Rick gets to hand notes to me. Today is our Oscar show. Tonight is the Academy Awards, and as usual, we bring in our guest. We have Adam Greenbaum, owner of Visualite Cinema in Stanton and Vinegar Hill Theater in Charlottesville. Adam, say hi to the good folks.
Hi, good folks.
I'm not sure we heard you.
Hello, good folks.
Hang on.
Am I on?
Well, who knows if you're
on. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to say anything.
I hear you, but I'm not sure that my friends at home hear you. So say something else, Adam.
Hello. Am I
okay, I think we're doing
audible.
Okay. And I'm going to switch over to Tom over there. Tom DeMontier. Tom, did I?
Hey. How's it going?
Okay, did I get your name correct?
Yeah, Tom DeMontier.
Tom DeMontier, coordinator and film reviewer for WNRN's 91 Seconds on Film.
Correct.
And sitting right between them, keeping them apart, is Ben Knuckles, Associated Press writer and a longtime film reviewer at illinformgadfly.com.
And also here with us is Will Smith. He's also another reviewer for 91 Seconds on Film. He stopped in as well.
And a great actor.
Yeah, Will, I love your films.
By the way, Sean,
never heard that before.
Said we
Sorry.
Were here, you said we were here as usual, which makes it sound stale, like Meryl Streep at the Oscars. Are we getting any of this? Can you hear me? Okay, I can't hear myself, but
yeah.
That's all right.
I know the feeling. All right, well, as usual, because you guys are, you grace us every year at this time to come in and talk about the Oscars and give us your picks and just banter back and forth. And this is an interesting year, the Oscars. They're doing things a little differently. For one, it's later in the year. I guess the broadcast got bumped up to this late date because of the Olympics. And what I find interesting about the Oscars is that, you know, it's about the movies, but it's really a television event. And this year they've got co-hosts. They've got stars Steve Martin, you know, who's still a big movie star, been around for decades, and who's the other host?
Alec Baldwin.
There we go. Good. I knew I couldn't. Alec Baldwin, who started out in the movies and still does movies, but now a TV star. I want to talk a little bit about the nominee selection process before we get into your picks. I want to talk a little bit about the nominee selection process, because they're doing something a little differently this year, too, with 10 Best Picture films. We're going to get to that list in a minute. But this year, they bumped it up from 5 to 10, and they're doing an instant runoff system. Now, this is interesting, because before, if you were an Academy member and you're voting on a film, the Best Picture film, all you need to do is get most of the votes, right?
The one you likey.
Right, right. And so then
put an X next to the movie you like the best, and that's your choice for Best Picture. That used to be the way it was done. Now it's done in a way that is very, very complicated. I think the
Karzai family would enjoy using this method in Afghanistan, because it would ensure you know, that a corrupt regime could stay in power. I'm not so sure it's the best way to pick a movie, but go ahead. Why don't you explain it, if you can, Sean?
No, that's okay. And I got news for you, Ben. 4 minutes into the show, you're finally on the air.
Well, and the problem is I don't have an off switch, so you'll have to.
Well, I have your off switch, which I use liberally at the beginning of the show. So before there were, 5 best films, and you'd pick your favorite, and whichever one got the most votes was the best film that year, which meant it was possible for the best film to have been selected by 21% of the Academy voters. So now they've changed to an instant runoff system.
Wait a minute, Sean. Are you saying this explains Crash?
I think it explains a lot of things. Titanic. So now you do a. So now the Academy voters, and we'll just go through those are in a second. They pick their they they go through the list and they pick their favorite 10 and they number them 1 through 10. And then the if there's a top 5, then they get the 5. But if there's any contention, then they'll start dropping the lowest vote ones and move them up. So if it was your second choice, some votes carried over. If it was your third choice, some votes carried over. Not dissimilar to a system that the local Democratic Party started here last month for picking candidates. So I've had a little bit of experience with how instant runoff works, and that was a success here.
It's a caucus system, is this what you're saying?
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always do a great job in Iowa picking the right person.
But it also, I'm wondering if it's going to make the winners this year totally unpredictable. Because, you know, before, I've engaged in Oscar pools and made bets with people, you know, friendly bets. But there's always somebody who you don't expect to win, sort of the dark horse who rises to the top of one of the categories. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are and how this might affect that whole process. This is just for the best picture.
Let's be clear. This is only in the best picture category. The other categories, you're still picking who you like out of a reasonable number of nominees. I fear that that creating this very elaborate balloting system is going to be too arduous a homework assignment for the aging and august members of the Academy. And some will take to picking the one they like the best, putting that at the top, and then drawing out of a hat or throwing darts to fill out the final 9. I can't be sure that everyone will do his or her diligence. And truly, how could even one do diligence in choosing between which movie you want to rank number 5 and which movie you want to rank number 6? It's a bit absurd. It's absurd. Critics, myself included, put out 10 best lists, and it's absurd how we rank them. Because really, who's to say which is better, the 6th best movie or the 7th best movie on your list? That it's just how you're feeling that day, really. So it's easy to pick your favorite, but it's not easy to rank 10 movies. And so your question was, is it going to make the winner difficult to predict? And I think the answer is yes. Now, will that manifest itself this year? Maybe not, but I think history will prove ultimately that it'll be tougher to say who's going to win.
Well, I think already in some ways moving it to 10 has been successful, because the whole point of the move was to manufacture some sort of drama, and we're here talking about it at the opening of the show, you know, mm-hmm. at length, which, I mean, it does merit that level of discussion, but it has generated that drama they were hoping to. Hopefully, you know, they want more people to stay up later and actually watch it at 12:30 or 1 a.m. whenever they finally finish.
Okay. And I think also it's a reaction to past years where often there weren't a lot of mainstream films that made it into that category. And, you know, the viewership was seriously declining. So, you know, now you have a large proportion of very mainstream blockbuster movies.
Yes, it's a bald-faced move by the Academy to pander to the largest possible audience by nominating blockbusters in the Best Picture category.
All right. Previous years, you never would have seen like Inglourious Bastards or Up, like even an animated film getting a Best Picture nomination. You never would have seen that if they hadn't expanded it to 10.
Which, as Adam mentioned, raises the question: why do we have an animated film category? The animated film category was created because animated films were never nominated for Best Picture, and now we have an animated film nominated for Best Picture, which takes some of the suspense out of that one, doesn't it?
Well, it's because Pixar wins every time. I think they kind of wanted to take the wind out of the sails.
All right, and it's also nominated for Best Picture. Let's hold that thought, because I think there's lots of interesting background stuff to go there. But we have a phone-in guest on our interestingly enough, on our phone, and I'm going to push the buttons and get him on the air. Guest, can you hear us?
I can. Sean?
Yes, Jody.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jody Kilbasa, director of the Virginia Film Festival, who has something very special to tell us about the Oscar broadcast tonight. Jody, what's happening in Charlottesville tonight?
Well, we've been been officially sanctioned by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to host Oscar Night America. We're one of 50 charitable organizations across the United States that have been designated as a recipient of this evening. And it's going to be this evening. We're going to start at 6 o'clock with the red carpet viewings and everything, and then go into the actual broadcast of the show. And what will probably be Virginia's largest high-def screening at the Paramount Theater. And all the proceeds will benefit the Virginia Film Festival and the Paramount Theater. And the Academy Awards have shipped real Oscar programs to us. They're actually quite incredible. They have lovely, glossy color photos of all the films that are nominated. And we're going to be giving those out. We're going to have beer and wine and soda and popcorn and some of Charlottesville's finest restaurants serving up food. And, of course, as I mentioned, probably the largest high-def screening of the Academy Awards in Virginia all this evening at the Paramount Theater. And the ticket price is only $25, and there's still tickets available.
There are still tickets available. So so how many officially Academy-sanctioned Oscar parties are there going to be across America, Jody?
There's 51 official parties happening, and there's only two in Virginia, and we're one of those two.
Fantastic. And how did this come about?
Well, we'd hoped to be able to launch a tradition here in Charlottesville, and in so doing, really kind of discovered that to really do it correctly, you need the sanction of the Academy. They're very protective of their brand. It's not something like you can just, you know, throw up a gold statue. It's all trademarked. So we had to ask permission, and we were well past the deadline, but, you know, we're fortunate in that we have some very strong advisory board members living out in Los Angeles that are fairly influential, and Academy members themselves, and they kind of came to our rescue and said that, you know, given the fact that the Academy is already a grant for the Virginia Film Festival, we receive a grant from the Academy, that they should allow this sanction, and they did.
Well, that's terrific. So a lot of locals, Jody, may think of the Virginia Film Festival as an annual event that we do every fall, usually in October. But it sounds like the Virginia Film Festival is trying to keep a presence throughout the year.
Well, we are. We have a Virginia Film Society that's part of that Virginia Film Festival that's ongoing, and we're currently screening films year-round every Monday evening at the Paramount Theater. We're showing mostly classic films, although we have the Black Mariah Film Festival, which are new shorts coming up actually on Monday evening, mm-hmm. March 8th. And we'll continuously, from time to time, do some independent films there as well. We have the Rat City Rollers, the Derby Dames here locally are getting involved with that, and that's later on during the month. And we're hoping to keep a year-round presence, and this Academy Awards event is one of those ways.
All right, so it starts at the broadcast starts at 8 o'clock tonight, but you're opening the doors at the Paramount earlier, right?
Yeah, we're opening the doors at 6 p.m. this evening, and, of course, we're going to be doing broadcasts of the red carpet interviews prior to. And as I mentioned before, there's food, beer, wine, the official Academy program, which everybody will get, and all for $25. And tickets are available at the door, or you can go online right now at www.theparamount.net. and purchase your tickets. And we're expecting a very good turnout tonight. I think we've already got about 600 people coming. And, of course, Paramount has room for up to 1,000. So I think it's going to be a fun time tonight.
We have
Dan Schutte and Tiffany Sargent from Newsplex that are emceeing the evening as well.
And is this a black tie affair?
This is a Hollywood-inspired dress event. Some people will be coming in tux. Other people will just be coming dressed up a little bit. We don't want to keep anybody away, but we also want to respect the evening and have a fun night out for the Oscars.
So we can come as our favorite movie character then.
That's true. You can wear your boa, Sean.
I'm gonna pull out my son's Darth Vader mask, I think.
Exactly.
Right. So you gave us a website for the Paramount. Where else should we go to find out about Virginia Film events throughout the year?
You can always go to vafilm.com, which
Excellent.
Is our website for
Excellent.
The Virginia Film Festival, which, of course, is presented by the University of Virginia.
Very good, Jody. Great talking to you, and we'll see you tonight.
Great. Enjoy talking about the Oscars for the rest of the evening.
Thanks. I hope you're tuned in.
All right. Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye. That was Jody Kielbasa on the line. Gentlemen, have you already got your tickets? Are you going to be there tonight?
I don't live here.
And I know you've got a baby at home, Ben, so you've got a great excuse, plus a 2.5-hour commute.
That's my blanket excuse for everything this year.
How about you, Adam? You're going to be around?
No, I'll be back in Stanton watching it at home.
Oh, that's always, you know, it's always fun. Just sitting around with
yeah.
the family,
yep.
watching the Oscars. All right. So before we go into some of the picks, I just want to pick up a thread that we were talking about earlier, and that was with the Academy voting, because the preponderance. But my understanding is, and I want you to speak up to this. My understanding is that the preponderance of Academy voters are actors, and you know, when you're going through the process of selecting all the nominees, all the Academy members can vote. So sometimes, some years, there's a discussion of actor films versus something like director films. You know, in 1979, I think it was Kramer versus Kramer was selected, and people, you know, was selected for Best Picture that year, and it was definitely seen as an actor film, whereas Apocalypse Now, which was more of a director's film, wasn't. So, going through the list, Adam Greenbaum, Tom DeMontagne, Ben Knuckles, you have a. How do you think that might affect selections tonight?
Well, I just think this. I think the way the voting works now, it's going to reward movies that nobody hates, and movies that people who don't rank number one are willing to rank number two or number three. Those are going to be the ones that that are likely to prevail. As I said, maybe not this year, but certainly in the future, if this system continues. And sure. Actors' films may be more valued under this balloting system than they would have been previously. But then again, the Academy has never really been one to strike out and honor visionary directors, certainly at least not when they're doing their best work. Visionary directors tend to get honorary Oscars at the ends of their careers. Think of Alfred Hitchcock or Robert Altman, neither of whom ever won an Oscar for directing, and neither of whose movies ever won Best Picture. So I think it's likely that the more bland milquetoast selections could prevail in the Best Picture category, because they are movies that no one loves but everybody likes.
Okay, Ben. Well, don't hold back here. But before we move forward, I need to. Remind people that support for WNRN is coming from Culture, Virginia's tobacco accessory shop with locations in Chaco Bottom and on Hull Street in Richmond and near UVA in Charlottesville. Culture carries a variety of glass pipes and smoking accessories, including vaporizers, hookahs, incense clothing, and a new Culture brand rolling papers, as well as pipes by local and national glassblowers. For more info, it's culturevA.com. And I can think of a few people who would like some vaporizers. Tom, is there anything you'd like to vaporize? I caught you by surprise there, didn't I?
That's right.
Anything to pick up on Ben's subject about actors and directors voting for films?
No, I mean I think you know what could happen tonight is you know despite the giant blockbuster that is Avatar, it could be rejected widely by a lot of actors and end up kind of falling by the wayside and not winning Best Picture. Which is probably likely to happen, but that's for at the end of the show when we talk Best Picture.
Okay.
What you're saying? Actors want to actually be in the films and not just do voiceover work for animation like they did in Avatar. I know that's not entirely fair to all the hard work that Sam Worthington and what's her name did. Zoe Saldana, yeah, that's the one who played the hot blue chick. You know, they did a lot of physical work, but. It's not them on screen.
Well, they had released a consideration video that kind of did comparative screenshots to show them being actors, just so that the Academy could actually consider them, you know, not just a CGI.
Yeah, but unfortunately, these folks aren't Andy Serkis here. They're not, you know, they're not all that talented. They're not Gollum. They're not creating indelible digitized characters. They're just saying James Cameron's wonderful. Wonderfully poetic lines.
You're telling me you weren't sold by the pathos of Jake Sully? Come on.
The script was abysmal, yes.
Okay. I suspect that Avatar is going to come up in discussion again. But right now, I need to say that it's 11:20, and the markets of Tiger Field forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley is sunny today with a high 60 to 65, 55 to 60 in the valley, mostly clear tonight, below 30 to 35, and then sunny again tomorrow with high 60 and 65 once again. Right now in the valley, it's fair at 43, also fair and 48 in Lynchburg, partly cloudy and 54 in Richmond, and in Charlottesville, it's really fair with 54.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming on WNRN is also being brought to you with the support of Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. All right. Gentlemen, do you think it's time to start getting into...
Yes.
Thank you. Do you think it's time to start getting into your picks?
Let's do it.
All right. Let us begin with performance by an actor in a leading role. Should we... Do you want to go through them one by one, or you want to want me to read who they are?
Should we start supporting?
It doesn't matter where we start. Someone should read the nominees.
All right. I'll start with actor in supporting role.
I have to read the nominees in that one, though.
Okay. Go right ahead. And the nominees are?
The nominees for Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role, Matt Damon's dialect coach for Invictus, Woody Harrelson for The Messenger, Christopher Plummer's beard for The Last Station, Stanley Tucci's George Bush eyeglasses for The Lovely Bones, and Christoph Waltz for Inglourious Basterds.
That was great.
Beautiful.
And the winner is Ben Knuckles?
The winner is Christoph Waltz, of course. He's got a dump truck out behind the Kodak Theater with all his other awards in it, and he's just going to toss the Oscar in on top. It's going to make a nice clinking sound. Hey, you know, this guy is a formerly obscure Austrian character actor who lived and worked in England, mostly in television. And Quentin Tarantino saw him in something and decided he would be perfect for the part in Inglourious Basterds. And he was very memorable. He was evil and yet simpering at the same time. He loved pastries and murder. So that's fine. He's going to win. It's hard to really... see what his competition is. Everyone seems to agree that Stanley Tucci was nominated for the wrong movie. He should have been nominated for his very warm portrayal of Paul Child in Julie and Julia. Christopher Plummer is 80 years old and did a lovely job in The Last Station. His beard was working hard, but so was he. But I don't really see a lot of momentum there. I don't see momentum for The Messenger because... I didn't see the movie, and neither did anybody else. And then Matt Damon, well, yeah, I can't even...
Just can't say enough good things about Matt Damon.
Yeah, and also, it's going to be the third year in a row that a villain has won in the supporting actor category. Of course, last year, Heath Ledger, and the year before, Javier Bardem.
Yeah, and not just, throughout history, this has been a category for villains, for outsized performances and...
Villains are fun to watch, and they're usually
Adam
not
Greenbaum.
In the leading role, so that's how they wind up. In
which
the...
does explain Stanley Tucci. He was a paragon of patience and goodness in Julie and Julia, and apparently that was found boring. I won't say it was found boring. It was really a question of studios deciding which performance they want to push. And Stanley Tucci got a push for The Lovely Bones, and there he is.
And I would say there's obviously a couple people who are left off, but one who jumps out at me is Alfred Molina from An Education, who played the father, and I thought it was an extraordinary role for him. And An Education was nominated for Best Picture, and I think, you know...
Good Lord, there it is. Who knew?
Well, you got 10.
Yeah, there we go. All right,
beautiful bouquet.
Let's and Adam, do try to get as close to the microphone as you can.
Sure.
Let's move on to actress in a supporting role. And who wants to read that? All right.
I'm going to read it. Well, sure.
Will's going to jump in.
The nominees for actress in a supporting role are Penelope Cruz for 9, Vera Farmiga. Farmiga? Am I pronouncing that right?
I think it's Farmiga.
Farmiga for Up in the Air. Maggie Gyllenhaal for Crazy Heart. Anna Kendrick also for Up in the Air. And Monique, Mo apostrophe Neek, for Precious.
Do you get the sense that the Academy rounded up 4 people off the street to serve as token opposition for Monique, to so that someone could be there to smile when they, you know, announce the nominees and then she goes up and wins? I mean, seriously, there's nobody. This is not even close. This is a total blowout and in Monique's favor. There's nothing. I like Vera Farmiga a lot. I've liked her in everything I've seen her in, but my goodness. This is a palooka category. This is Ohio State playing
San Jose State
playing Albemarle Community College or something. I don't know.
I think there were a lot of other actors and roles that I thought you could have thrown in there. I thought Julianne Moore was good in Single Man. I thought Melanie Laurent had a lot of heart in Inglourious Basterds, beautiful in that red dress. And Rosamund Pike, again, for An Education. She's kind of a dead ringer for Brigitte Bardot, kind of played a flaky blonde that was the absolute opposite of...
And by the way, I don't think any of us disagrees that Penelope Cruz is an extraordinary actress, but 9 was a movie that few people saw, and those who did see it hated it, and even among those who hated it, people thought that Marion Cotillard was, if anyone, the person who should be honored for that movie. But you cannot underestimate the power of Harvey Weinstein to kidnap and chain down and torture members of the Academy until they nominate the person he wants to have nominated for a movie that he produced. That's there you have Penelope Cruz nominated again for Best Supporting Actress after her victory last year.
And Monique also, I mean, a comedian that plays this terrifically kind of sick, demented role of somehow justifying her child being sexually molested from the age of 3 on by her father. I mean, also, it's again, the Academy awarding people that go in a completely different direction from what they're naturally cast for. You know, she looks gross, her underarms are hairy, giant mole on her face. I mean, about as bad as any actor can look. The camera's right in her face, every tear, every groan, every grunt. There's a lot in that performance. I don't mean a lot in that it's over the top and poorly done. I just mean that it's a pretty rich performance.
Well, Adam Greenbaum.
She's taking notes from Charlize Theron.
Okay, so we've talked a little about the politics behind this and the push, but what about her performance?
Oh, I thought her performance was stunning. You know, I mean, as Tom said, I think he laid it out perfectly. You know, she was formerly on the TV show The Parkers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a very kind of flat comedic role, and she comes out of nowhere and pulls this performance off, where you come out of the movie feeling like you have been physically assaulted for 15 years.
And a lot of credit goes to the director, Lee Daniels, for seeing that potential in her. She's great in the movie. I'm happy she's going to win. She creates a terrifying and yet empathetic monster.
All right. Before we move on to the next category, I need to mention that support today is coming from CNA Camp, where a part of the proceeds go to the Charlottesville Area Community Foundation. CNA Camp offers table linens from Belgium, planting pots from Campania, Lucas treasures from Madagascar, and products from Mabinti, an organization that enables disadvantaged women and girls in Tanzania. CNA Camp also features the art of Suzanne O'Brien. That's CNA Camp in Charlottesville. For more info, it's 434-973-5555. All right. Next category. Should we move on to actor in a leading role?
Sure.
All right. Adam, do you want to read that?
Yeah. Performance by an actor in a leading role. Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart. George Clooney, Up in the Air. Colin Firth, A Single Man. Morgan Freeman, Invictus. Jeremy Renner, The Hurt Locker. My personal pick is really a tie between Jeff Bridges and Colin Firth. Obviously, two very different roles. Colin Firth in A Single Man gives such an incredibly restrained interior performance. So much is read in his simple expressions. And Jeff Bridges does what he's really does best, kind of playing an extremely vulnerable, independent, and yet, you know, sadly dependent alcoholic.
Well, Jeff Bridges is going to win, again, I have no real issue with that. Jeremy Renner was extraordinary, I thought, in the Hurt Locker. He showed what makes an eccentric soldier tick. Bridges has a sublime confidence on screen. You believe him every second. You believe every gesture, every line, because he knows what he's doing. He's a veteran of four decades in the movie business, and like many great actors, unlike great actresses, he's had to wait his turn. He's had to wait to outgrow his good looks. That's not how it works with the women. Women win Oscars early in their careers. Men win Oscars late in their careers. So it's time for Bridges to take one home.
All right. 11:32 on the Wake Up Call. We have Adam Greenbaum, owner of Visual Light Cinema and Many Great Hill Theater. Ben Knuckles, associated press writer and longtime film reviewer at InformGadfly.com. And Tom DeMontier, coordinator and film reviewer for WNRN's 91 Seconds on Film. Tom, I'm going to go to you next. Thoughts on the performance by an actor in a leading role?
I kind of want to echo some of the things that Adam said with regard to Colin Firth. There's so much melancholy in that role that he really embodies, and I think it's a real standout role for him and for his career, and hopefully, with that. But
by the way, Adam said it was a restrained interior performance. It certainly was at the beginning, but not by the third act when he's kind of cutting loose. I was pleased that it wasn't another repressed Colin Firth who doesn't show his emotions and makes you read his grim expression to glean how he feels. It certainly didn't. It became something more than that. Even though, that movie was that was pretty. A pretty insufferable piece of art cinema from the fashion designer Tom Ford.
I would say,
yeah, you have two really well dressed men in this category. I noticed watching A Single Man and Up in the Air. You know, both of them pull these perfectly pressed shirts out of their drawers, and it's not quite the high fashion as Single Man, but as uncomfortable as Colin Firth looks in his fashion just due to his inner monologue, the other George Clooney's in the total other direction. I mean, in Up in the Air, he's just so comfortable in that role, and despite the shortcomings of the film, George Clooney, it's always a pleasure to watch him. He just seems comfortable and effortless, but at the same time gives you something to kind of ponder and chew on. But Jeff Bridges, it's hard to believe it's been, you know, around 40 years since the last picture show came out. And, look back at Jeff Bridges' roles, whether it's The Big Lebowski or even, you know, a film like Starman from the 80s. He brought out so much in these pictures that, you know, for all practical purposes, shouldn't have been there. And as much as I am a fan of the genre of Crazy Heart, the alt country and outlaw country and things like that, I felt like the director, you know, stumbled. You could tell he was a first-time director. He'd never directed anything before, not even a high school play. And still, despite that, I think Bridges makes the film infinitely watchable. And, I mean, he is always somebody that he's right there. I trust Jeff Bridges.
By the way, speaking of directors who stumble, my fave Clint Eastwood certainly, made it fun for all of us in Invictus. And now, Morgan Freeman is one of the greatest actors of our time. He's a national treasure. But good Lord, that is an inept performance in Invictus. He stumbles and dodders and sleepwalks his way through the role of Nelson Mandela, and it's a shame to see him nominated for such inferior work.
Okay, so we all remember in 92 and 93 when Tom Hanks got Best Actor nominations twice in a row. So,
well, no, he won.
He won twice in a row. Right.
Being nominated twice in a row is the easy part.
No, okay. So are we going to be standing here next year talking about Jeff Bridges getting nominated for The Return of Tron?
Wow.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, you brought up Starman. Adam Greenbaum, thoughts on actor in a leading role?
Well, I would go back to something that Ben said about Colin Firth. Just to kind of challenge his assertion. To me, the most extraordinary parts of his performance were the restrained parts. The scene where he gets the phone call. There are probably four lines.
Yeah, that's the clip they're going to show tonight, by the way.
Over a five-minute span of film, and you watch his entire world just collapse in his face.
I liked the flashbacks with his lover. I thought that he and Matthew Goode had a fun, playful chemistry. That's kind of the thing I look for more than the big actorly moments. But it's okay. That was good. He gets the phone call. Yes, I understand. I hear you.
All right. It's 11:37 on the wake-up call. We've got Adam Greenbaum, Tom DeMontier, and Ben Knuckles. We're discussing the Oscars.
And Will Smith.
Oscars. And Will Smith back there. How could I forget about you? Your box office boffo, Will Smith. All right. I'll bet you never get tired of that, do you, Will?
Never.
All right. We're going to move on to performance by actress in a leading role. Now, Sandra Bullock has already won, because yesterday she got the Razzie for worst performance of the year in All About Steve. And you got to give her credit on this. She's a classy lady. She went to the Razzies. She accepted the award. She brought a box full of DVDs of All About Steve. She handed out DVDs to everybody that she could. And she said, "Did you guys really watch this? Was this really the worst performance by any actress in the entire year?"
And they said, "Yes."
and I like this.
You?
I like this. She said,
"We don't think you saw it, Sandra."
She said, go back and watch it. She said, "And if you change your mind, I'll come back next year and hand the award back." you got to give her chops for that.
It's like alchemy. You got to have the doo-doo to have the gold, right?
Isn't she one of the few people who's actually accepted one of those now?
Yes. The last one to accept them was Halle Berry, but she accepted it for Catwoman after she had already won an Oscar, so the pressure was off. Sandra Bullock has managed to make it graceful to accept a Razzie and be nominated for an Oscar and be the favorite to win an Oscar in the same year. Probably her off-screen grace certainly outstrips her on-screen charisma or emotional reserves, but can't have everything.
There's also speculation that that's what cost Eddie Murphy the Oscar a couple years ago, the fact that he had made, what was it? Norbert came out the same year as Dreamgirls.
Norbert,
that took the Oscar right away from
Well,
him.
Actually, yeah, Norbert came out. It came out in February or late January during the period when the Academy members were voting. So people were driving around L.A. thinking about, who do I want to win Best Supporting Actor?
On the billboard.
And then they see a billboard for Eddie Murphy and Norbert, Murphy, and they say, not him.
I think he released it late, so, you know, the Razz people, he had that buzz going into the Razz Awards.
So we haven't read the nominees.
We can read the nominees for
Best Actress. Sandra Bullock for The Blind Side. Helen Mirren for The Last Station. Carey Mulligan for An Education. Gabori Sidibe for Precious.
Well done.
And Meryl Streep for Julie and Julia. Yeah, hey, I've only been doing radio movie reviews for 12 years. I don't know how to pronounce anybody's name. But
if nothing else, your pronunciation is usually spot on.
Yeah. So, y'all really think Sandra Bullock's going to win? Because, man, it's kind of hard to swallow. Now, I say this as someone who used new fatherhood as an excuse not to see The Blind Side. But, folks, really? Now, you protect his blind side.
Let me...
This team is like your family.
Let me tell you something. As being a native of the state of Mississippi, even though, you know, she's supposedly from Memphis, Tennessee, in that accent, it's not as bad as it could be.
Oh, wait. Okay, so it's not as bad as Renee Zellweger in Cold Mountain, then?
I was going to say as bad as Cameron Diaz in The Box.
Ah,
that was awful.
That was a bad accent, but that was a fun movie, though. That was more fun than
but
The Blind Side.
Let's be fair a little bit. I mean, for a positive here for Sandra Bullock, she plays a Southern woman that lives in the shadow of no man, and I think she has a lot of chutzpah, and I think she has. I mean, she's got cojones in this role.
Chutzpah,
both. She's got them both. So I could see her winning. I mean, what's overlooked in this category is it is a battle of age. You've got Meryl Streep and Sandra Bullock, and then who we really should be talking about are Carey Mulligan for An Education and Gabourey Sidibe for Precious. And I think I would give it to Gabby Sidibe if I was voting for this, because she has this performance that in her fantasy world, when she is on the red carpet, et cetera, she is one of the most beautiful, large women that you've ever seen. And then when she's back in her reality, she's as immovable as a stone. And as, I mean, it's the spectrum of her performance for me is strong. And Sandra Bullock doesn't have that. And as much as I like, you know, Meryl Streep's performance of Julia Child, and I don't think it can be written off as just being kind of a comic caricature. You know, I think Gabby here. I don't think she'll win. I think Sandra will win, but I like Gabby.
Well, I think if you were to predict, if there were to be an upset in this category, if you were to take the tack that Sandra Bullock is not a sure thing, and I certainly. If you're filling out your pool sheet tonight, I think Sandra Bullock is the one you should choose if you want to be safe. But I think there's a chance that Meryl Streep could win. And to me, that would be I surprisingly find myself in a position of advocating for Meryl Streep this year. Normally, I think she's someone who's, you know, technically skillful and who chews the scenery with the best of them. But I really was moved by her performance in Julia. It really surprised me, because it was a movie I didn't even want to see. I was dreading, and I certainly I was right to dread the Julie sequences, which were appallingly bad. But every scene with Streep just lit me up, and I found I was surprisingly moved by Julia Child's struggle and her journey toward becoming a published author and becoming respected in her field. So I think that you know, Meryl Streep has been nominated I believe a dozen times, and she hasn't won since Sophie's Choice, which was released in 1982. Now, a lot of the movies she's been nominated for over the years have been very forgettable clunkers, things like Music of the Heart, you know, and just because Meryl Streep is in it, she gets nominated for an Oscar just for showing up.
Right.
But I think this is different. I think this is special for her, and I'd like to see her pull the upset. But history shows that the Sandra Bullocks of the world are the ones who win best actress.
It's a comeback role too.
All the A-list starlets have an Oscar. It's like an accessory. It's like it's like a pair of Manolo Blahniks. You know, they carried around with them with their little dog, and they all have one. Sandra Bullock doesn't have one. The actresses who get overlooked are the really super talents who are not necessarily big box office draws, like people like Joan Allen, Laura Linney, Julianne Moore, Naomi Watts. Those four have never won Oscars. I would pick those over the ones who have won Oscars, like Renee Zellweger, Nicole Kidman, Angelina Jolie, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Halle Berry, Reese Witherspoon, Kate Winslet. Well, Kate Winslet's pretty good, but you get the point. The pretty starlets win Oscars while they are pretty starlets. And Sandra Bullock is a little bit older than some of these, but she still fits the pattern.
All right, Ben, you're going to have to take a breath. Adam, I think you got short shrift on this topic.
Yeah,
but
let me just throw in two cents if I could.
Make it very quick.
Yeah, Meryl Streep was terrific. But the whole time I'm watching the movie, I feel like I'm watching Meryl Streep do a really great impression of Julia Child.
Okay.
That's my 2 cents.
All right. It's 11:40 on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Pod in the Quad. In this week's cover story, Albemarle Public Schools technology chief explains that the iPod touches he introduced in classrooms 2 years ago aren't just music players. Calvin Trillin outs a local Szechuan chef in The New Yorker, and now traffic at Charlottesville's own Taste of China has spiked with reports of long lines of hungry residents clamoring for Chang. And former Governor Wilder's 17-year-old ban on buying more than one handgun a month may be headed for repeal, backed mainly by House Republicans, for whom the purchase of a dozen handguns annually is apparently just not enough. All that and more in this week's Hook. Don't shoot. Not Ben, you got to take a breath, because I have to tell you that support for NRN today is also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, with outdoor gear, clothing, and footwear for all your hiking, travel, and everyday needs. You'll find new products, the North Face, Arc'teryx, Patagonia, and Mountain Hardware at Blue Ridge, along with Gore-Tex footwear from Keen, Merrill, and Vasque. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, Charlottesville, at Wintergreen, the Chesterfield Town Center, and West Broad Street, Richmond, at BRMS.com. And stick around for Les Temps Perdue. Today at noon, join Drew Thompson for Les Temps Perdue, the best of the 80s and 90s alternatives. There will be no Michael Jackson or Tiffany, but you will hear the Kennedys Dead, the Mo Depeche, and Poe. Requests are always welcome. That's Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music and Brazil. Excuse me, Basil. And if you're listening to the Oscar show and you're interested in giving your thoughts, you can call 979-0919 or 1-877-967-WNRN-ROCKS. All right, Ben, you've been holding your breath. You're bursting at the seams. You got steam coming out of your ears.
The ship has sailed.
The ship has sailed. Excellent.
We're moving on.
We've done actor, actress, leading, supporting. Are we ready for Best Motion Picture of the Year? Do you want to talk about directors?
Yeah, let's go with Best Director.
All right, Best Directors.
It's always a good...
And Adam, I'm gonna let you lead off with this.
Sure, let me actually find the list. Catherine Bigelow for The Hurt Locker, James Cameron, Avatar, Lee Daniels for Precious, Jason Reitman for Up in the Air, and Quentin Tarantino.
I've heard of that guy. What are your thoughts, Adam?
Well, I think Catherine Bigelow will win, and I think she should win. I thought Hurt Locker was a completely immersive experience. It was just a riveting war story and personal story without any camp at all. And I think it's really difficult to direct those types of realistic action sequences. So I think she I mean, Lee Daniels obviously did an amazing job with Precious. Jason Reitman, Up in the Air was a decent movie, but nothing great. Tarantino.
And really, that's what you want in the Best Director category, someone who can pull off a decent movie.
A decent film, yeah.
Well, it was proficient. Tarantino, I love Tarantino, and I loved the movie, but I don't think it was up to the standards. And Cameron spent, 30 years working on this movie. So.
Hey, I just for 2 seconds, I want to I don't think he's going to win, but I want to defend Quentin Tarantino, because this is actually one of those Tarantino movies where I was so surprised with the beauty, the scope of his cinematography. I have never seen giant open fields, beautifully put together and choreographed shots like this with Tarantino. Usually everything's up close and tight and a little, more action and character driven. And this, there was a little time to kind of take a lot of it in. And, Inglourious Basterds isn't, in a lot of ways, is a movie about movies. And, you can argue with it from a Tarantino standpoint. He's not giving you what you want and what you expect, but I think it is a film that people are going to go back and see a few more times and recognize it for its greatness and its place in the Tarantino canon.
Well, right. By the way, Tarantino has seen Once Upon a Time in the West hundreds of times. So he does know how to do open spaces. Like that's in his canon. He just hasn't brought out that part of his skill yet.
All right, Adam, you leapt straight into the actual the film itself. But let's talk a little bit about politics, because in addition to directing The Hurt Locker, Catherine Bigelow is famous for what else?
Having been married to James Cameron?
Exactly.
Which is totally not fair, because, I mean, she's a great filmmaker. She's been a great filmmaker for years. She's never had a material to work with. But if you can see her in a throwaway genre film like Point Break, which, go back and watch Point Break. It's fantastic. It's tremendously entertaining, and it's beautifully made. It's silly. Of course it's silly. It's about people robbing banks in Reagan masks, and it has a scene where Keanu Reeves fires his gun up into the air in frustration, but damn, it's good. The woman can direct.
I mean,
she's fantastic. Now, politics, okay. Oscar politics or politics politics? What do you mean?
Well, you know, I mean, are there some people who might want to vote for her just to be obviously not voting for James Cameron?
Well, I don't know. I think James Cameron's very respected in Hollywood as well. He should be. I think people respect that he's also a great filmmaker. He makes movies that people want to see. He makes great popular entertainments. I don't know if people think I'm some kind of a pompous elitist. I like every movie James Cameron has ever made. I think James Cameron, you know, he's an ass. Everybody knows that. And I think he's won already for Titanic, and so there's this sentiment that he doesn't need to win again.
Tom, quickly,
Catherine Bigelow. We're talking about the politics that's in her favor. What about what's against her? A few years ago, we were talking when we were trying to decide if Brokeback Mountain could win. You know, we also said, you know, war films are largely unpopular, and you know, it's almost impossible to win Best Director, Best Picture for something like that, especially in all the different wars and stuff like that we're involved in, and people not wanting to put that maybe as the Academy's choice. So, I mean, I think she's got just as much against her, and I think, you know, trying to delegitimize her winning tonight by saying, you know, the politics involved, good gosh, I mean, the Oscars are just loaded with politics and other things like that, and I think, you know, if there is any for her, it's, you know, probably just by the thimbleful and not quite as much as Weinstein or the other bunch.
And she's the fourth woman ever to be nominated for Best Director, and that's pretty shameful. Lena Wertmüller in the 70s for Swept Away, the one that Guy Ritchie remade with Madonna. Jane Campion for I don't know if Lena Wertmüller was nominated for Swept Away. She was nominated for something. That came out of nowhere. Jane Campion was nominated for The Piano. Sofia Coppola for Lost in Translation. And then someone pointed out to me that, oh, yes, Little Miss Sunshine was directed by a husband and wife team. So Valerie Faris gets credit for being having half a nomination for Best Director for Little Miss Sunshine, which is half a movie. So it's like a quarter. Anyway.
All right. This is great, but it's 11:54, which means we've got just a little over 5 minutes to discuss 10 films. Those are the best motion pictures of the year.
Well, most of them aren't very good, so it's okay. We can...
Will's going to read them.
Will's going to read them. Go ahead, Will.
And the nominees for Best Motion Picture of the Year, Avatar, The Blind Side, District 9, An Education, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Bastards, Precious, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air.
Okay, Avatar, Best Film of the Year or Best Film Ever?
No.
That's the thing about Avatar that I find interesting, is that I can't find a lot of people who really love it. Everybody saw it, and everybody enjoyed it, but it doesn't have that. Titanic had passionate fans. It had women going back to see it a dozen times.
Okay.
It had Leonardo
Avatar
DiCaprio.
Doesn't have passionate fans. People are, you know, being depressed about this movie. They're going into deep depressions.
Oh, that was made up. That was something the marketing department at Fox made. That was brilliantly marketed, by the way, but that was made up. Okay. They can't. They're so depressed because they can't go live on Pandora. Yeah.
Avatar's a great film, but is it a good film?
The strange thing about Avatar for me is it's in a way the film is so much better than the sum of its parts. And you break it up, it's kind of a lousy script. The acting is okay. The story is, you know,
Hackneyed.
Hackneyed.
It's like hypnosis. But I mean, you have to kind of be willing to go there.
Yeah, but taken together for some reason, like Led Zeppelin, it's awesome.
All right. All right. Now, Michael Moore this week.
It's an amazing movie.
He said he wants Avatar to win because it's an anti-Iraq war film.
It certainly is. That's not necessarily going to help it. The Hurt Locker is apolitical, which is one reason it has a good chance of winning. This is an interesting, what we have to mention here is this is the huge David and Goliath story. The Hurt Locker, if it wins, will be one of the lowest grossing
19 million worldwide.
Best picture, and Avatar, of course, is the top grossing film ever made. So
top grossing anything ever made,
yeah,
I think.
$2.5
billion.
Nothing has ever made more
dollars
money than Avatar.
Exactly.
Warren Buffett has never, yeah. ExxonMobil's profits, cower in the wake of Avatar.
Avatar, in a lot of ways, is more of a monument than it is a film.
What is the Academy going to pick? I mean, everybody, these are the movies we're talking about because this is perceived as a two-horse race. They both had the most nominations, and The Hurt Locker won most of the awards in the run-up to the Oscars, but the question is, does the Academy want to be populist this year? Because the nominating 10 movies for Best Picture, it's a desperate bid for relevance. It's a bid to bring in the viewers, to bring in more money, to make people excited about the Oscars again. So will they go the extra step and actually say that this incredibly popular movie is the best movie? It's possible, but I'm not sure. I think The Hurt Locker is still the odds-on favorite.
All right. If you're tuning in late, it's the Oscars show on the Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. We are talking to Adam Greenbaum, Tom DeMontier, and Ben Knuckles. It's nearly 11:58, so we got 2 minutes to cover 9 films. Everybody, talk fast.
Avatar, good movie? No. Pretty movie? Definitely.
We haven't talked much about District 9.
Well, I was thrilled to see it in the category. It's a pure genre exercise. It's B material all the way. It's got politics because it takes place in South Africa, so it stumbles into a certain relevance. But it's a great little aliens on Earth caper about aliens who eat cat food out of cans and live in the slums. It's wonderful.
And I want to give a shout out for Up. I mean, I thought it was a very sophisticated film dealing with age and changing circumstances, and can speak to young and old alike. And Ed Asner did a fantastic job as well with that.
First 13 minutes of Up are some of the most moving cinema that you'll ever see.
Now, Up is nominated for Best Picture and Best Animated Feature. How's that going to work?
Well, it's going to win Best Animated Feature. I mean, why have a category?
I thought in the past Michael Moore had trouble being nominated for Best Documentary and Best Film.
Yeah, we were talking about that, yeah.
But, yeah. And now that might not be a problem anymore, although clearly you don't see any documentaries in this. Although Jason Reitman did lie to those people and tell them they were going to be in a documentary in Up in the Air, all the regular folks who were interviewed about losing their jobs, that was
Documentary over the end credits.
Yeah, yeah. They told him it was for a documentary, and then used the footage in his feature. So he's, ethics.
All right. What haven't we talked about? We talked about Avatar, a little bit about Blindside, District 9, and Education, Hurt Locker, and Glorious Bastards, Precious, A Serious Man.
The Coen Brothers.
The Coen Brothers. How about that film?
Serious Man was great.
It was really interesting. It was just very strange. So I think that kind of like ousted it in that regard.
Well, it has no chance. It's happy to be there. They won 3 years ago for, was it three or was it
two years ago
for No Country for Old Men. So, it's, they had to put something in there as number 10. Well, I think that'll be number 10 on a lot of people's lists unless it speaks.
Blindside, I think number 10.
All right. Gentlemen, I'm sorry to have cut this short. We're already afternoon. Drew Thompson is here, chomping at the bit, ready to get on the air. This has been the wake-up call. This is Sean McCord signing off. Next week, Rick is going to be back here, standing in front of the microphone, talking to Waldo Jakewith. And I thank you very much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.